presentation. Honorable Kirkland, and then Honorable Raputi, almost all of us. Start and then go is Honorable Ngoma, you'll follow, Raputi will follow, and then I may make noise as well this side. But I think during the presentation, I think there was a security related issues that you talk to us about. And I'm sure we've got media around here, and one would really plead with the media, officers at the back, to treat that part of the presentation that talks to security measures of the country with due care. And yeah, special relation of that the presentation to the ID, the smart card, and that cross activity inside the Home Affairs. I'll just beg media and that's PNG. Just to treat that part with the necessary care and patriotism. So that we don't find ourselves defeating the intentions that we're supposed to be. And thank you very much. And then can you start, Honorable Kirkland?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to Prof. Mbeu for the presentation. I think this is very helpful, and I hope we can support the invitation to visit the department. Chairperson, my question is, how far is the engagement with the DPSA on the issue of GPW becoming a state-owned entity? Because we know this matter has been on the table since the third term in Parliament. What is the success of the e-gazette since its inception? How do you monitor and gauge number of people who are using the service on daily days? The third question is, on your website you mentioned that the Government Gazette are also available at the GCIS. To some centers that have ICT connectivity. How many of these centers and where are they located? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks to Professor Mbeu for the input. I just got a few questions. The first one, we do note on the mandate, the issue of the security funding services as well as all the other issues and the reporting mechanism to the minister. If I may just quickly go to key challenges that were also given to us. I think the first question I would not ask is the question which was asked by my brother, and that is the transformation of to a state-owned company. How far is that progress? So I'm not going to address that. That should have been my first one. The second one is on challenges again, the renovation at the Sakhi Street. Noting, Professor Mbeu, when you informed us about Pavilion 1, 2, and 3, and I think there was a common thread which was going through these inputs, and that was the delay by the Department of Public Works to actually ensure that this is achieved. I think the main thing here is not just the delay, it's also the monetary value due to the delays, because once there is a delay in a particular project, it extends over to the following year, it means that even the money over that renovation is increased. How much of that have we actually seen, and what has been done to ensure that we keep to time frame, as the Chairperson has spoken also about time frame. I think the issue of the third point on special salary dispensations and the improved staff retention is quite an important point. I think when Professor Hughes spoke about the matter of certain companies coming to poach on the people that we have trained, we need to really take this seriously, the special salary dispensations. Although, of course, it's got to do with the labor laws and everything else, and exactly what type of an entity is it? Because if it is a private or probably completely out of government, then definitely people can play around with salaries, but it has got that attachment to government, then definitely you can't pay as much as you would like to. So we need to look at exactly how can we work around that in order to keep our people, because we do know for a fact that government has been a breeding ground for educating people and skilling people for other entities, which is extremely incorrect. My next point is this machinery. I think I Prof spoke about the asset recapitalization program, where he spoke of the machinery that's about 50 years old and whatever, which needs to be replaced. Of course, that has got to be replaced, looking at the people as well that are skilled. How long do you think this process is going to take, the process of really coming up with the state-of-the-art type of machinery that we're talking about? Because that is quite important, because we definitely need to replace all those machines. The last issue, or the last two, is the smart ID rollout. May I say that I'm extremely grateful that presently this smart card cannot be forced presently, and we hope it's going to stay like that as long as possible. As well as the process which Prof explained to us, you know, when it actually starts and not having any human hands or human beings touching it until it gets to the end. I must say, Chairperson, that when I presented myself to Home Affairs and I was applying for the smart card, we were given permission from Parliament, that's about year before last. And I went in about 15 minutes. The process was finished because I got a few people that were on the queue as well. But what was interesting was that as soon as I walked out of Home Affairs, right here in Cape Town, coming back to Parliament, already I had received an SMS that informed me that, you know, everything was fine and they would be contacting me within so many days. And it happened just like that. I think that is efficiency at its best. I would really like to upload that. And then on this dispatch, the new dispatch center, which is my last issue, we definitely don't need any corrupt officials, because a lot of our systems were broken into due to, you know, dirty hands meddling within our staff. So definitely we will be seeing quite a lot of that happening, where through the mandates as well as through the missions and visions which are usually put in most of the offices or in most of the Home Affairs departments, stating that, you know, this is the type of work that we need. We hope to see a lot of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Raputi.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Prof, for your excellent presentation. Yeah, I always say that I'm a proud South African. And to you, Ntate, you said that you will organize that I must go to Home Affairs for my ID, smart ID, but I said no. I want to test. I don't want to get any favors. I did it myself. I went there, and really, the treatment and even, you know, the processes were excellent. I did it on my own. I didn't want your favor. I'm sorry, that was excellent. Prof, I just wanted to ask this state of the art machine, because you say it is the best in the world. Where was it purchased? And how many warm bodies did it replace? And are we not going to face any challenges of this state of the art machine having any, you know, being, you know, breakdowns? You know, because we are always saying having the state of the art, and that are we having, you know, any person who can be able to assist if there is some problems with the machine? And the other thing is this courier services, because now there is some gaps here. This courier services, how reliable are they? They cannot. Will they not protect us? because we are talking about the security. I mean, if they can sabotage the exam papers, then what about our smart card? Okay. I was talking to my niece, and she was saying that, you know, I need this smart card, but I don't have money. All right. So, with this, the schedule of poverty, will we be able to assist those who don't have that 140 rand? And the other one is the state-owned company. You see that transformation from a government component to a state-owned company. And I think a company is more of generating of the profit. Will we be able to generate profit with this cash of poverty? Those were my questions for now. Thank you.
Thanks. Maybe I think from my side is, of course, is that we have received the presentation is very nicely bound, which we appreciate. But the only thing is that we are printed only on one side of the page, and then which means it's about double the papers that I was supposed to have in my hands, and I hope that will improve to print on both pages moving forward. Then I think the other issue, of course, is the one that I've raised. The other issue that I think is the one that I've already raised, just simply to get to time. When are we targeting for this DPW to be a full-fledged state-owned company? When are you anticipating that? And then how are we dealing with the limitations that will actually prohibit us moving there? The acquisition of the offices, then the Department of Public Works, and then the recapitalizations of the machinery to ensure sufficient fees, or maybe to reach sufficient production that would generate fees that are adequate for us to actually move in that direction. Remember that as well is that currently, I'm not sure, but currently may not be paying for board fees or whatever in terms of governance. When now you are a state-owned, then there will be a big portion that you are paying for people that are not actually participating in the production. And then that is an extra budget line that you will have. And then also the, of course, is the cost that you will still continue to incur with the office space and the factory spaces. And then so that when you stand alone, then the best is that you should not be having those kind of particular costs other than on the operational cost. And, then the other issue, of course, is in relation to the current situation in relation to performance, your own performance targets, that it looks like you have not actually reached even 50% or so, or running around there on your own targets. You know, it's what is it that you're doing about that? Because moving forward to a fully-fledged state entity, you can't afford for sub-performance. And then what is it that you're really doing about that? I think for now that is what I'll address with you. Or let me just finalize with the question of the vacancy rate. Because it looks like when you are actually moving to electronic machines that are not labor intensive, whatever you have now, you already have a challenge of a child is keeping them. But then on one side, then you have got some 55 to 70 something vacant post that you have not yet filled. Do you intend filling those positions with appropriate qualified personnel while you are employed, training others who match, or do you intend scraping those positions off, retraining people, and then to try to match your new machinery? What is there that you're doing about that? Thanks. I think you can start talking to him.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for these questions. Firstly, the question from Honourable Sislan. In terms of DPSA, currently as a government component, our legislative mandate is contained in the Public Service Act. However, as I mentioned, the government component was simply a halfway house to become a state-owned enterprise. And the progress we've made so far in trying to complete that journey is in assisting in the development of draft state printed bill, which is currently in the minister's office. The how long the process will take in transition to state of enterprise, I think is something a matter for the portfolio committee and for the Minister of Home Affairs as to how quickly they will drive it. But I imagine it'll be a case of public hearings that the portfolio committee might chair. I don't know, you know, this is not my specialty, but I imagine that the process could be completed within a few years. It would certainly assist the GPW in terms of increasing the flexibility of its operations. It would still be a state-owned company, 100% owned by the government. Government is its own shareholder, but it would be able to operate effectively without the prescript of having to build through DPW, for example, or having to abide by the Public Service Act, salary scale, etc. The success of the Government Gazette has surprised us all. Every week we get people who have been subscribing to the Government Gazette for many years canceling their subscriptions because they find it much easier to use the electronic gazette. And as I said, when we introduced the facility this year of being able to submit your material electronically, we think that will be a major innovation. We have been monitoring this progress through the hits on our website on the electronic gazette aspect of it. And I don't have the figures here, but they've been increasing exponentially month by month. And so we feel that this has been very successful. Again, we're following best practice. For example, the government printing office in the United States, most of its output in terms of government gazettes and other announcements of government are produced online rather than in print. And so that is a trend that other state printers around the world are following. In terms of GIS and its two strong centers, I don't actually know how many different things. Perhaps my director of marketing stakeholder relations will be better qualified to answer that question.
Thank you very much. This is a new relationship that we've just established with the GCIS, and you would notice that recently they've actually launched the Tsong Center as well, and it's an ongoing relationship in terms of the numbers. In fact, what they actually do, because people actually work on it, they actually ask for them for, they provide all the services that are there in government, and then when they ask for the government gazettes, and the staff at the Tsong Centers do actually print out the government gazettes for them. And in terms of the numbers at the moment, I don't have those for you, but they can be sent to you later. But the relationship that we are working on, for instance, from here, we are also going to be meeting with the Cape Town office.
Honourable Nkomo asked about renovations at the South Street, the Pavilions 1, 2, 3, and the delays. There is a much larger delays. I mean, year by year, building costs increase by 5 to 10% per year. We have, over the past 5 years, been able to accumulate sufficient funds within the Paymaster General's account in order to pay for the renovations and for the asset recapitalization. But of course, the value of those funds trying to relative growth year by year as there are delays. In fact, last year, the National Treasury informed us about 12 months ago that unless we started spending some of that money, they would have to, removing some of that money at the end of the financial year 2013-2014. And consequently, we had to move ahead with the renovation of Pavilion 3 outside public works because Treasury is there to start spending or the money will be removed, or at least some of it will be removed. And furthermore, there was an emergency in terms of the fact that unless Pavilion 3 was completed by the end of next year, there could be interruption in the printing of African passports, which of course would be unacceptable. Fortunately, Department of Public Works is moving now. They have a professional team currently preparing a site master plan, and we think the renovation of the rest of the facility, actual building work should hopefully start early next year. So there is a question we really have to whether, as a government component, we do have to work through public works anyway. The Minister of Home Affairs asked us to give legal opinion on the matter because he is engaged with the Minister of Public Works about the issues of these delays, etc. And the legal opinion that we obtained states that if you read the Public Service Act, it is very clear that the government component is not a government department and therefore does not have to actually build a work through public works in terms of purchasing buildings or renovating buildings or whatever. So that is still something that I think the Minister of Home Affairs will take up with the Minister of Public Works in terms of seeing how we can expedite the renovations and whatever. In fact, not only do renovations mean relative monetary loss when there are delays, but it also means that the asset recapitalization program is held up with machines worth scores of millions of rand sitting in boxes because the building that should house them is not yet ready. And furthermore, these machines cannot be placed in the old building because some of these machines worth up to 50 million rand. Once they are assembled and put in place, because they weigh 20, 30 tons or whatever, you cannot then disassemble them and move them to another site when renovation is complete because there's no guarantee that they will actually operate. So it has implications in terms of moving into new facilities as well as delaying the asset recapitalization. In terms of the special salary dispensation and retention, there has been a lot of poaching of our trained staff, and I know the Minister of Home Affairs wishes to take it up with the Minister of Public Service Administration in terms of how we can ensure that this moves on. The process was that the previous Minister of Home Affairs asked us to engage with DPSA in terms of the special salary dispensation 2.5 years ago. The Minister of Public Service Administration at the time instituted a task force chaired by her DG to actually look at the information, the data, etc., and produce a report for her. There were a lot of delays in producing that report. It did eventually land on her desk earlier this year, but then the national elections took place. And so the Minister of Home Affairs, we should see that report and to engage with his colleague at the Service Administration in terms of trying to get this thing implemented, because as the honourable members point out, the Borsfield Committee made this recommendation in the third Parliament, and now we are in the fifth Parliament. In terms of asset replacement, how long will it take? Well, the program started in 2011-12. It should be completed by 2017, but as I say, it has been delayed because of the delay in the renovation facilities. But we think that the renovation will complete before the end of 2017, and we think the average recapitalization will be complete before the end of 2017, so that the entire organization can be relocated at least by 2018. In terms of the smart ID card, which cannot be forged, it's interesting that when the UK issued an electronic ID, it was hacked within half an hour of its production, whereas the chip on this card has not been hacked yet. The issue of cyber security is a major issue, because there's no point in stealing a smart ID card, it's useless. You cannot forge a smart ID card or issue a false ID. So the only way you could produce a obtain a smart ID card would be through intercepting the cyber security, the cyber links between Homicide Officers, CELA, and GPW. So Home Affairs is working, and CETA is working on ensuring that cyber security is maintained. And as the honourable members know, with cyber security, it's a continual process, because the international criminal syndicates are always looking at ways to breach your cyber protection services. Indeed, the service in terms of the light capture and the SMS that you receive as you're working out of the office is impressive. And I think it's an example of, you know, what the National Development Plan calls developing a capable state. You know, within the mind of the public, state-owned company equals ineffective, expensive, and even constant government bailouts. Now, I think government printworks is an example of how that must be the case, and that you can have a state-owned company that meets best practice internationally. But I think it's also an example of how a government department can be transformed in a manner in which nobody entered it 10 years ago, when they used to call Home Affairs horror affairs and things like that. Now it's regarded as one of the better government departments, and it's a good example of what is possible and how state-owned companies and government departments can actually be effective, efficient, and cost-effective. The dispatch center is, we hope, going to progress now that DPW is moving on this, and will ensure that corrupt officials and maybe working at Home Affairs will have to find an off-center source of income stream. And it's an example of Basipele, people first, in that, much is made of service delivery progress and this and that and the other, but here's an example of service delivery that is improving day by day through the work of government and of Home Affairs and GPW. Honourable Apuchi mentioned about the status of the art machines where they're purchased. The machine that produces the passport booklets is an UNO machine that comes from Japan, and it was purchased back in 2008-2009. It's a very remarkable machine. The machines that personalize the passports are produced by a company called Mulbauer, which is a German company that produces most of the advanced passport personalization machinery that's used all over the world. And when it comes to the smart ID card, polycarbonate cards come from a company called Gemalto, a French company, but it's manufactured in Finland. And the machines that personalize the smart ID cards come from a company called DataCard from the United States, which is in partnership with Altec in South Africa. Now, when we purchase machines, we follow one best practice, which is that the challenge is to find the money to buy a machine. But actually, a bigger challenge is to make sure that you deal with the issue of breakdowns and depreciation, etc. Now, in terms of breakdowns, what happens is that when we sign a contract for a new machine, which has been procured through the legal procurement processes that the government lays down, the 10% of the price that's agreed upon is maintenance cost. And on an annual basis, you have to pay 10% maintenance cost. And this is something that other government departments need to be aware of. Because, for example, with hospitals, we're always hearing of CT scanners that break down and this and that. There. That should never be a problem. Because whenever you purchase a machine, it's not the cost of the machine, it's the cost of maintenance that's a critical issue. So with our, and most of these international companies that produce these expensive machines have a part in South Africa. So as soon as the smart ID card stops for a few minutes, we're on the phone to Altec. Their engineers arrive, and the machine is working again within half an hour. So the downtime is just negligible. And that's something that other government entities can learn from, that's how you procure machines, is costs, capital cost, plus maintenance costs, which is 10% of the capital cost on a yearly basis. And then the other thing that we do is ensure that we have a disaster recovery site. So at another campus, perhaps I should mention it in public, at another campus in Pretoria, which is 15 kilometers away from the passport factory, there are the same personalization machines that do the passports, and the same and one smart ID card machine that can be surrounded. So if a plane were to land on the Lisaka Street site, within half an hour, passport and ID card production could be, begin again at the disaster recovery site. And that entails a lot of expense. I mean, if the total cost of the machines in the parts portion hydro factory, however, is of the order of about R1 billion, the cost of the discovery, the disaster recovery site, is of the order of R150 million. So, again, it's a lesson for other departments that you cannot operate a service to the public without a disaster recovery and business continuity plan, because it's not acceptable that essential services to be interrupted for over too long. In terms of courier services, yes, well, you're quite right. Reliability can sometimes be an issue with courier services, but they cannot sabotage the process. And the reason is because when the dispatch center is complete, what will happen is that when the batch of passports for a particular office and the batch of ID cards for the same office is delivered on the street to the dispatch center, the operator then will zip the barcodes. When they zip the barcodes, they get activated within the home address system to say, this passport has been issued, it's a legitimate passport, a legitimate ID card. And the package is then given to the courier. The courier then delivers it on an overnight basis to the Home Affairs office. They cannot interfere with the material in any way. And even if they did, it would be pointless because, as I say, if you steal a smart ID card, it will no use to you whatsoever. And similarly with the passport, the security fees on the passport are equal to those on the 10 best passports in the world. So it's not possible for any sabotage to occur in those areas. The cost is an issue. Government has determined, and the Minister of Home Affairs has determined, that the cost of smart ID card should be no more than the cost of a new ID book, which is R140. Now, that was an immense challenge, because equivalent electronic IDs around the world, be it in Germany or wherever, cost 5 to 10 times as much as that. So, through a competitive procurement process, international tender process, we were able to drive down the costs so that we were able to deliver the smart ID card at manufacture cost of R100, which is one-tenth of what other advanced countries in the world do. Now, the Minister of Home Affairs determined that first-time applicants, i.e. those 16 procuring an ID document for the first time, receive it free. Elderly people, 53 now, so I don't think those plus 60 is elderly anymore. But anybody over the age of 50, whatever you want to call it, over 50, receives the ID card free. The fiscus does not currently have the funds available to provide free ID cards for example, the unemployed, the poor, whatever. I mean, at R140 times 38 million, you're talking about a multi-billion-rand project. But I know that the Minister of Home Affairs is in constant communication with the Minister of Finance to see how he can relieve the burden of cost for those who are poor or indigent. But as I said, the cost is remarkably competitive compared to other ID cards around the world. Now, as a state-owned company, GEW has not received a government subsidy for a couple of years now, and it operates by business principles in which the products and services that we provide defray all our operational costs. And written into that is usually a small profit margin. Now, Treasury has been telling government departments that they should consider going back to GPW for many of their journal printing work, because it's very difficult for private sector printer to match our costs. The reason being that our profit margin is small, but sustainable, and secondly, any profit that we make is plowed back into renovating facilities, procuring new machines, etc., etc. So a government department can know that if they procure service from us, it is not in order to enrich a CEO or executives or this or the other. It's, and of course, our books are transparent because we gave an annual report to Parliament every year, and you can see exactly what we spend money on. So that's how we work in terms of providing a service in a country where many people are poor. The Honourable Chairperson talked about the paper. He's absolutely correct. We should be printing both sides of paper. In fact, for the annual report, which we will produce probably around September, we're considering using recycled paper. The curiosity is that recycled paper is more expensive than ordinary paper, which I find strange. But anyway, you know, we may be producing on recycled paper for archaeological reasons. Time frame. As I've mentioned, the time frames are in the hands of this committee and the Minister of Home Affairs in terms of a transition to state-owned company. We would like it to be as quick as possible because, as I say, it would make our operations that much more flexible and expeditious if we could be a state-owned company and assist us in terms of retaining our staff if we could set salaries that were competitive with those companies that coach our skilled staff. So in terms of dealing with some of the challenges, for instance, around public works succession, as I mentioned, public works is increasingly unblocking the blockages, and the Minister of Public Works actually had a meeting with the Minister of Home Affairs together with the DGs from both departments in order to address some of these, and the dialogue is continuing. As I mentioned, legal opinion states that as a government component, we're not a government department, and yet we're not constrained to actually work through the Department of Public Works. The Honourable Chairperson mentioned that the transition based on the company comes with its own costs, and he's absolutely correct. And that's something that we're very careful about controlling and ensuring that we build a sustainable model as a state-owned company and are not profited with what are public money, basically. We increasingly look at new business opportunities in order to ensure our sustainability, and that's partly the task of my colleague, Hans Bonakele. And so, for example, the Minister of Home Affairs has instructed us to move towards producing an e-passport, whereby there will be chip within the cover page of the passport, so that eventually one will be able to progress through e-gates at ports of entry, such as Oliver Tambo International Airport. So that will not entail dramatic increased costs, but it will be an example of us expanding our services, ensuring that we remain sustainable. And we're well aware of issues of the cost of office space, factory space, etc. But that's one of the reasons why we would prefer to stay in company, where if we spend R1 billion renovating 60,000 square meters at the Visakha Street site, that asset then belongs to us. Because in terms of the books and the balance sheet, it looks very strange if you spend R1 billion and then have no asset. So it's actually a very important point in terms of the financial model. Performance targets, the Chairperson is quite correct. In the past, we often have not met performance targets. And that is partly because we haven't set targets properly. Sometimes they've been unrealistic or too ambitious. On other occasions, it's because the targets are reliant upon other stakeholders. So if the target is to move into renovated facilities by such and such a date, that has been stymied by delays with public works. But we are getting better at performance targeting and planning, so that, for example, in the last quarterly performance report that we delivered to the DG and Minister of Home Affairs just last week, we actually met 87% of our targets. So we are improving in that respect, and that will be important, particularly when we become a state-owned company. The vacancy rate has been a low point in terms of our performance over the years. It is improving. And again, as I mentioned, one doesn't like to make excuses, but some of the vacancies have related to delays in implementing our new human resource organogram, and that delay has been partly because of delays in renovating facilities, purchasing new equipment, etc., etc. But the vacancy rate is improving. We're working assiduously to try and improve it, and also to review the human resource plan. For example, the plan had been that we would have 32 senior management staff, and over the past 12 months, we've reviewed that and realized that we only need 22 SMS staff. So we're looking at costs, we're looking at ensuring that our human resource organogram is appropriate to a modern British media company, and not that of an old company. And that we train and develop our staff for that new company with its high-tech genes, etc., etc. In terms of, I think those are the questions.
Okay, thanks for the
question.
Thank you. For the responses, is there any follow-up?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Honorable
Yeah. No, I just wanted to check that, the government and how best can they, assist or or advise the government with already depleted resources that the government is having in relation to, you know, abuse of resources. Talking about the housing, health and that, is it possible that this unique ID number can be instituted from birth, you know, as a starter? Because we see really resources being abused, and how can they advise on introducing, where can they start introducing, you know, the unique numbers as control or as a measurement to, you know, for people to abuse their resources. Thank you.
Any other member for a follow-up question? Happy? Okay, I think it's from my side. On page 8 of your presentation, I may be a little bit stupid here, not understanding what's happening, but production of identity documents. Because my understanding now is that we have got an age group in between 16 until 60. They have the ID book, or they're supposed to be having the ID book. Now, you are now giving the 16-year-olds, those that are graduating to 16 years, smart ID card, free of charge. And then the old generation, 60 upwards, then they are having access to the ID cards. Actually now is that if everything was working well, you're not supposed to be producing the ID book. I'm just trying to actually internalize that you're not supposed to be producing an ID book unless you only produce an ID book for a person that the ID is lost or is damaged badly. So, which means that 2014, 2015, they're actually not supposed to be having ID books produced other than replacement ID books. Am I making sense, or am I understanding what is happening now? And then the other issue is the explanation I've heard about the staff and vacancy rate. You're almost saying that you are going back to review your organogram. Is that what you are saying? And then because you're saying that the vacancy rate that you have is based on the organogram that you have, which certain positions you feel now that they are not necessary, especially with your SMSs, your senior managers and whatnot. To me, that tells me that you need to review that organogram and have the relevant positions that you need to have. So, are you saying you're going back to do that? Or is that an explanation that you are giving that the organogram is not appropriate, but you're not going to do anything about it? Then the last question, I think a follow-up, is that because you're not generating fees on the IDs, or a consequence is that you're not going to generate fees on IDs, if the previous explanation I tried to give is correct, the fees that you get from ID books is going to disappear very soon. If not just next year, it's supposed to be gone. And then the smart ID cards, currently you are giving to those that are not supposed to pay anything. The 16-year-olds and the old age. You have not yet started giving it to everybody in between who are supposed to pay. And then the question still arises now of your fee generation. And then I think let me just stop there. You can respond.
Thank you very much, honorable checkers and honorable members. Yes, the Honourable Lopudi commented on how can we use these products and services in a country where resources are often depleted through abuse and the like. It's a very pathetic comment because our argument to the Department of Health has been that the smart ID card in a country that spends 250 billion rand a year on health in public and private sector could have a dramatic effect on costs. Let me give an example. Currently, I don't want to be too pejorative here, but you know, the health system in South Africa can be chaotic in the sense that on one day you'll see a doctor in a primary healthcare clinic and the doctor will write notes or whatever. The next week you'll go and see a private GP. The private GP doesn't know the doctor you've seen, has no sight of the notes, and does not know what x-ray or blood tests were ordered or whatever, whatever. With a smart ID card, it will be possible for you to go and see whatever health professional you visit, be it a doctor, physiotherapist, nurse, pharmacist, whoever. And that health professional would have a card that gives them professional rights. And when you put your card on the health professional's card reader, they are then able, firstly, to see on the computer screen that the photograph on the card and the person sitting opposite them is the same as the photograph on the chip. And then, using their card, they will then be able to open up access to your electronic health record, which will be held on the cloud. Now, the concept of national health insurance is that there should be a unit health system in this country, and that the National Health Fund should be able to purchase services for citizens from both public and private sector. And therefore, by definition, there should also be a national health information system whereby your health records are unified. And so when you see a private doctor or public doctor or whatever, they are able to look at your electronic health records as long as you grant them access using your card. They are then able to update those electronic health records. They're able to see the x-ray or CT scan that you had 3 days ago, your CD4 count from last week. So it will mean there'll be less duplication and wasteful use of tests. There'll be more efficient information on the particular patient who's been seen, this and that, the other. It could save sort of health costs hundreds of millions of rands. It also, in the private sector, as all of our members know, there's a lot of abuse that goes on in terms of people accessing services that are not due to them, this and that, the other. What the electronic health card, electronic ID card will do is ensure that there's proper billing, and the billing is done according to the rights of that particular person, because as soon as the electronic ID is recognized by the billing office, they're able to know that you are eligible for this or that or the other, whatever. So, you know, kind of like Discovery, for example, has introduced electronic ID, partly to improve services, but also to reduce its costs, because a little of its costs are due to health fraud. So, it'll make a difference to housing. It can make a difference to housing in terms of the fact that the person you identify is a South African citizen with a valid ID document and not a stolen ID book. It will ensure that our population register will be updated and improved so that everybody who's on a population register and has a smart ID card is a South African citizen. And through other measures that we've introduced, such as, for instance, producing the unabridged birth certificate, that is also a document that is extremely difficult to forge, it will mean that people will not be able to enter the National Population Register through late birth registration and false birth certificates and this and that, the other. So it will make a major difference in terms of abuse. I mean, just the ID abuse, in terms of citizens who may have a bank account cleaned out, trip, identity theft, et cetera, et cetera, is supposed to cost the banks and individual citizens hundreds of millions around the year. So it should make a big difference. The Honourable Chairperson, I mentioned about the production of the ID box free for those turning 16 and for those over the age of 60, and that we will have no more ID books. You're absolutely correct. This is a challenge in terms of our funding model. Before, we were producing about 220,000 ID books a year. As I mentioned, in July, August, that shifted so that we produced 120,000 ID cards and only 120,000 books, so the number of books halved. And he's absolutely correct that at some stage soon, I said within 12 months, it should be sooner really, the Minister of Home Affairs should consider declaring that no more ID books can be produced. If you lose your ID or you need a new ID or this, that, or the other, there should be a smart ID card that you should issue with rather than an ID book. Now, that will be challenging in terms of our fees generated, but as it happens, the ID book didn't actually generate much profit for GPW because the book was actually produced by CETA. Part of it was produced by CETA, and they have their costs there, and then it came to GPW for further processing. Whereas with a smart ID card, it's just GPW that produces it. The profit margin that we put on the ID card is very small. Manufacturing cost is 100 Rand. But the challenge, however, for us is that the ramp-up initially was very slow in October, November, December. But now it's accelerating month by month. And so we hope that the numbers of ID cards that we'll produce this financial year will ensure that our balance sheet is collected. Because currently we're sitting with blank ID cards that should have been produced into personalized ID cards. But because of slow wrap-up, that didn't occur, which challenged our balance sheet. But that is being corrected month by month. So we anticipate that we should be able to deal with that and maintain a sustainable service with only a small amount of profit that can ensure that sustainability.
Okay, since on those responses, I think we just need to applaud the briefing that we have received. As I've indicated before, that it has actually clarified many of the issues surrounding GPW. And of course, is that the members have applauded, you know, the efficiency and the security of the production of the smart ID cards. And of course, is that one wants to indicate that the delegation led by the CEO, they have clarity on the intent that they wanted to drive the GPW to go, and as well as responsibilities that they have to another run GPW. And also, we need to indicate that we really appreciate your commitment to contribute to the National Development Plan and also to contribute to the security of employment of the employees that you have. I think it's appreciable. And also the intent to employ the state-of-art technology, the latest technology in your production system. And of course, it's one which is the biggest. We really appreciate your consciousness on the security of the state and its citizenry. I think it must be held high in our systems, in our plans, so that we really eventually get to a cleaner population register and also have only the people that are supposed to be in the country at any given time. Not have people that are supposed to be here with some uninvited friends. No. I think there is that load, and then the consciousness that you have, I think, will assist us to move in that direction. Honorable members, I think as that score, of course, also just simply to note that when we meet you again, we will be talking the staff issues based on a new or a reviewed organogram, so that you have an appropriate picture of the staffing levels in your entity. Yeah, honorable members, I think on that score is we need to actually thank the delegation for having honored our invitation and having done as expected of any delegation that comes to talk to us. And again, is that they are then released, they can start taking their papers and everything, and as we have completed our work with them, then we said thank you. And thank you very much. And again, is that our numbers here doesn't allow us to proceed with the meeting. And on that score, then this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.